We've got Bruce Williamson on the line from the campaign group Rail Future. Bruce, hello there. How are you doing?
Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, yeah.
You happy with this, with these rail increases? 98p from every pound going back to the network? Does that sound about right to you?
What they mean there, they don't mean reinvested. They mean going back towards running costs of the railway. So the 2p in the pound is the profit that the train operating companies make.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue, couldn't you, fans of nationalisation would say, well, why shouldn't 100 pence in the pound go in towards running the cost of the railways? Wouldn't that be better?
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a privatised railway. That's a political decision that the government has made. Renationalising it would be politically popular, but clearly ain't going to happen under a Conservative government. But, you know, they can't keep jacking up the price year after year after year ahead of inflation, because eventually you will succeed in pricing people off the railways totally. It's not a sustainable policy, so something has to change.
Well, the main problem is, Bruce, is that for the vast majority of rail travellers, they can't be priced out of the railway because they have no choice but to use it. It's everything else in their life that has to suffer because of it.
Well, there's some truth in that, but there will come a point where you take the view, well, I just can't afford to work anymore, or
yeah,
I can't afford to work in that job. I'm going to go and work in the local supermarket, because actually that will work out better paid when you factor in the cost of your season ticket. So, you know, it is price sensitive, and it will have an impact. But what is really surprising is that for the last 20 years, passenger numbers have gone up and up and up and up and up, despite the government's best effort to price people off the railways. But it looks like that growth is levelling off now. So we've reached a point where you can't get away with it anymore.
And what about accountability then? Because, you know, we keep getting told year after year after year that all this money is being reinvested in the network. It's in rude health. There's so much of this happening. There's so much of this. The problem was the previous government who didn't do enough to update the signals and the tracks. And then, of course, the hot weather ruined it for everybody. Why is there never any real accountability for any of these promises?
Well, I'm not sure that's entirely true. I mean, you know, the buck has to stop with the government, really, though. The train operating companies are sort of micromanaged for the Department for Transport. They don't have much room for manoeuvre. And the big investment decisions...
Well, they have room for manoeuvre in terms of how many carriages they put on trains.
No, they don't. No,
really?
They don't. No, it's all micromanaged by the Department for Transport, because the trains are allocated by the Department for Transport. And it has to be done that way because for a relatively short franchise, it wouldn't make sense to buy carriages in. And if you imagine you're a franchise with owning a whole load of trains, if you lose the franchise, you would continue to own the trains.
No, I'm not talking about buying new carriages. I'm talking, you know, the main problem is overcrowding on a lot of commuter networks.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and that's a symptom of the sort of lack of long-term investment. But the buying or the purchasing of new carriages, the leasing of them, it's managed centrally by the Department for Transport. So, often the question is, well, why don't they put extra carriages on? It would make such obvious sense. But the answer is they just don't have any because the government haven't bought them.
Right. OK. So why then can't Chris Grayling be held to account anymore?
Well, I think he should be. Yeah. I mean, Chris Grayling, he tries to pass the buck, like the timetable fiasco we saw in May last year.
Yeah.
But the train operating companies were certainly at fault, but a lot of the causes of the problem stem from mismanagement from the very top. Chris Grayling, I believe, ordered a reduction in the number of staff managing timetable planning, and we saw the obvious consequence of that because the timetable was so poorly planned.
But it can't all be Chris Grayling as
no,
well.
No.
You know, as a commuter myself, and as many people listen, also commuters, you know, we're at the mercy of what we feel are greedy kind of rail companies who will do anything to squeeze extra cash and not actually put on a better service.
Yeah.
That can go back into how they deal with complaints, how they deal with compensation, delay repay, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not suggesting that Chris Grayling is 100% at fault for everything that goes wrong in the railway. But, like I said, I'll go back to my point that the train operating companies are micromanaged by the Department for Transport. And obviously the franchised privatised system that we have is created by the government, and they have a chance to change that if they want to. I think they've made noises that they recognise it isn't working properly and that they need to make changes, but I suspect that those changes will be sort of just tweaking at the very edge of it rather than sort of coming up with a magic bullet to make our lives pleasant again. Sadly, because whatever that magic bullet is will be very expensive.
But everything's very expensive. I mean, it's expensive now. So you're saying to go back and fix it would cost us even more. I mean, it's just we just don't understand why it should cost us so much when no one else certainly in Europe seems to be suffering the same problems.
Yeah, well, there's two reasons why it costs so much. I mean, you're absolutely right that, you know, you look at the fares in Europe and it's shockingly cheap compared to what we have to pay. There's two reasons for this. Firstly, it's a very deliberate government policy that they want to subsidise the railway less, much less than our European counterparts do. And so they every year they're putting a greater proportion of the cost of running the railway onto the passenger, which is why we get these inflation-busting increases. But another factor is the privatised railway itself. The structure of the railway is very fragmented. There are many, many people and organisations involved, and the bureaucracy that creates leads to a very inefficient railway industry as a whole. Our costs are about 40% higher than they are in Europe.
So
that's one of the reasons why we're paying more. But you know, both those factors are in the hands of the government. The government could change that.
So, I mean, we speak to plenty of people who are brilliant at highlighting all the problems that we've got, and yet no one seems to really come up with a decent solution. What are you the saviour of that, Bruce? What can we do to...
Well, I mean, it's very easy to find out what the problem is. I mean, you know, the government could, at a stroke, reduce fares tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that they, when it comes to the driver of motor cars, the price of fuel has actually gone down in the last few years. It's now cheaper to drive a car. So why is the government, you know, reducing the cost of motoring, but it won't do the same for the rail passenger? It's totally within their hands, and they can afford to take the financial hit of not increasing fuel duty. So surely then they can afford to take the financial hit of subsidising the railways a bit more and giving us a more affordable railway.
And what is the answer to that? Why are they doing that?
Well, I don't honestly know. It's partly sort of political, but I think they have a sort of... strangely, they're scared of the motoring lobby in a way that they don't seem to be scared of the rail travelling lobby. But, you know, people like me are doing our best to sort of, you know, shout and scream. And I think the government really ought to wake up to the fact that rail commuters have a vote as well.
Yeah.
And also, you know, rail privatisation is very popular. So, you know, I know that the Tory government are scared of the prospect of Jeremy Corbyn becoming Prime Minister, but he's got a very popular policy there. And they need to be careful.
Practically, though, privatising it would take a long time. Nationalising it would take a long time.
Well, there's several ways of doing it. But what you could do, and actually has happened on the Northeast, the East Coast Main Line franchise, because that's failed three times now. And on each occasion it's lapsed back into state-owned. So it can be done, and it has been done. And when the East Coast franchise was temporarily renationalised, the passenger satisfaction seemed to be very good, and the train still ran and so on, and they gave money back to the government. But I think, you know, having said that, you know, you're right up to a point that you know, nationalisation wouldn't transform things overnight. It's not a magic bullet. We'd still have the same trains running to the same timetables run by the same people, and we'd still have that same shortage of rolling stock and ageing infrastructure that we're still suffering from. You know, we are suffering from decades of underinvestment. And it, you know, it's like turning around a supertanker. It takes what the railways need is sustained investment, and it will take time to turn this supertanker around.
I mean, quickly before we go, Bruce, is there one part, is there any of the Britain's rail network that is working, that has customer satisfaction, and it's not falling apart at the seams?
Yeah, I think there are many examples. I mean, you know, the railways aren't terrible. Actually, our reliability is probably on the European average. It's just the level of fares and the level of overcrowding that are a real problem. But, yeah. I mean, we've got new trains on the Great Western Line. They're working. They run. Chiltern Railway is traditionally seen as the golden boy of the privatized system, they have very high customer satisfaction and so on. So there are, you know, there are good points. We should, you know, the fact that people are still using the railways in increasing numbers means that, you know, quite a lot is right about the railways. And one other thing, we have one of the best safety records in Europe as well.
Yeah,
so it's
true.
All bad news, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, if 5G networks came in and everyone had a perfect broadband at home and stuff, a lot of people would choose to work from home and that stuff, the rail work.
Yeah.
Listen, Bruce Williamson from Campaign Group Rail Future, thank you so much for speaking to us. Appreciate you giving up our time. It's time now for the news headlines from Rachel Jewell.